From the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about the environment and our connections with it. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak. Palm oil. I bet you didn't think we were going to go there today. Palm oil. It's an oil from the palm tree that shows up in our food and personal care products every day. We use it to cook, and it's a popular ingredient in many of our prepared foods. In fact, a bar of palm olive soap now is actually made from the combination of palm and olive oils.
There you go.
I learned something already.
But the growing demand for palm oil worldwide has resulted in an economic boom for the palm industry, which has then resulted in the destruction of thousands of square miles of forest and jungle habitat throughout Southeast Asia being destroyed. Jungle biodiversity has been replaced by palm plantation monoculture.
That's right. And joining us in the first part of the show to discuss these impacts and what one large palm oil user has pledged to address this will be Gemma Tillich. She's Agribusiness Campaign Director for the Rainforest Action Network.
Then in the second half of the show, we'll speak about climate change, specifically something called the Student Climate Resolution that was drafted up by high school students and sponsored by Utah House Democrat Jim DeBacchus in this past state legislative session.
That's right. We'll speak with Piper Christian. She's a Logan High School student who helped draft this resolution. We'll ask her why she did it and her plans to deliver the resolution to the governor as part of the Utah People's Climate March being held this Saturday, the 29th, down in Salt Lake City. Dave Pacheco from Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance also joins in on the conversation.
All that, and we'll take a look back at last Saturday's March for Science. What was the point? What's next? And most importantly, what were the best signs?
Exactly. They were great. Now, we don't take phone calls during the show, but you can join in on today's discussion by posting your comments and questions to our Facebook page, KPCW, This Green Earth. Our connections with and impacts upon the environment, that's what This Green Earth is all about.
Hi, this is Ryan McLaughlin of the Ski Resort Property Group, proud sponsor of KPCW programming. Ski Resort Property Group, in business since 1993, is part of the Berkshire Hathaway Home Services family. Park City has been through three real estate cycles in the past 23 years. Let our experience guide you through the next real estate cycle. More about our group at skiresortproperty.com.
This is Chris Robinson with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties. KPCW is one of the many nonprofits our agents and company support. They are the backbone of Summit and Wasatch counties in our incredible community. More info at bhhsutah.com.
Welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak.
And joining us for the first half of the show today is Gemma Tillich. She's the Agribusiness Campaign Director for the Rainforest Action Network. And we'll be talking with her about palm oil, including what it is, why it's become so ubiquitously used, the environmental problems that that's causing, and then how we might fix those. So, Gemma, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Nell and Chris.
Well, let's start with this right from the top. What is palm oil and what is it used for?
Sure. So palm oil has become the world's most widely used vegetable oil. It's extracted from the African oil palm that's grown across Indonesia and Malaysia and is increasingly expanding into parts of Latin America and Central and West Africa. I think traditionally it's used to create processed foods, to create personal care products, but increasingly it's also being used as a biofuel to provide, so-called green fuels for major markets in Europe.
Oh, and so that kind of explains its expansion in growth and use, the growing thought of using it as a biofuel?
Yeah, that's an increasingly it's being used for biofuel, but if you're an American consumer, you're most likely to be interacting with palm oil every day when you go into a grocery store. So 50% of products in a traditional grocery store contain palm oil, whether that's the ice cream you eat, the snack bars, the chips, or the pre-made dinners such as, Weight Watchers and Smart Ones that are made by the big companies such as Kraft Heinz.
So give us a picture of how palm oil is obtained. Like, what is the, you know, harvesting and processing look like for this?
Sure. So one of the key issues with palm oil is traditionally it was grown in small crops in West Africa. But in the last 20 years, it's really been taken up as a major industrial crop that's grown by corporations across Indonesia and Malaysia. So what they do is they will acquire large areas of land that are covered in rainforest. The first step is to log the rainforest. They come through with bulldozers and clear these incredible expanses of biodiverse rainforest to plant row upon row upon row of oil palms. Throughout that process, you know, many of these areas of lands are actually the customary lands of indigenous communities. So a lot of communities are forced off their land and to make way for these corporate plantations. And over time, you know, there is a large amount of workers that are brought in to manage the crop. And a lot of these workers are also facing really harsh conditions, exposed to toxic chemicals, all to create, you know, this extremely cheap vegetable oil that is used by major corporations to make profits through the selling of their products across the planet.
Okay, so but specifically the oil comes from one part of the tree. The tree isn't felled after X amount of years. It produces a seed or a kernel that produces the oil?
Yeah, it's true. So there is a number of fresh fruit bodies that grow at the very top of the tree. You know, they are harvested off the tree after about 3 years of maturity. They then go into a process where the oil is extracted, and there is a further process where the kernel is extracted and oil is also extracted from that. So the two main products are crude palm oil and palm kernel oil. And the derivatives of those products are used in many of the products lining your grocery aisle shelves.
Right. Okay. Good.
Yeah. So it sounds like this is not just an environmental issue as you talk about the harvesting and the conditions. It's also, like many environmental issues, also a humanitarian one or an ethical one when it comes to the workers that are involved in processing this. Is that right?
Yeah, that's definitely right. And I think there's increasing documentation around, you know, child labour, some of the worst conditions of forced labour being experienced by workers on plantations across Indonesia and Malaysia.
Right. But on the other hand, I guess these industries try to sell these plantations or as our economic opportunities for them, jobs, right? We're going to come, we're going to build this plantation, you're going to have a job, we're going to replace this rainforest with this plantation, but there's going to be work here. Is that kind of the sell that goes on?
Yeah, I think that's true. And you know, to be honest, palm oil isn't an evil, you know, entity. Like, mm-hmm. It can be grown responsibly. And I think there is a growing movement of consumers and now a growing movement of corporate actors that are recognizing their responsibility in improving the way that it's grown.
So,
and that's, you know, part of the work that Rainforest Action Network does is, you know, to run campaigns and to lobby for the transformation of the sector. So it does protect rainforests, protect our climate, and uphold human rights.
So how can the palm oil harvest become a more sustainable one? What are the changes that need to be made there?
Yes, so there's three key pillars. You know, the first pillar is to ensure that when new plantations are put in, they're not put in at the expense of tropical rainforest. So this is referred to as no deforestation. So really de-linking palm oil from deforestation, especially in the tropical regions where it's grown. The second issue is really a critical one around saving the climate, and that is ensuring it's not grown on peatlands. So these are intensely carbon-rich soils that, you know, tend to be drained and exposed to create palm oil plantations. And they're the reason why Indonesia is the third largest emitter of greenhouse gases globally. So in order to save the climate, you know, we need to make sure that palm oil is not grown on peatlands of any depth. And the third key pillar is, of course, ensuring that we're upholding human rights. And that includes the rights of Indigenous communities to their lands, the rights of local communities to create a livelihood from their forests and other agricultural crops, and the rights of workers that are brought in many cases to work in these super remote industrialized landscapes of oil palm plantations.
All right, if you just joined us, we're speaking with Gemma Tillock. She's the Agribusiness Campaign Director for the Rainforest Action Network. We're talking about palm oil plantations, their environmental and human impacts as the plantations and that business expands across Southeast Asia, Africa, et cetera. Are there palm oil plantations in, let's say, South America, Central America too?
Yeah, and it is actually growing. You know, we're already seeing major impacts in tropical countries, rainforest countries like Peru and Ecuador. In Guatemala, there are large human rights issues occurring there. So, yes, it is expanding across the globe within a 10-degree radius of the equator where it can be grown. Key to that is, you know, the fact that it is having a detrimental impact on the environment. And many people would have seen, you know, and heard about the impact on the orangutan and the elephants and the rhinos that call these rainforests home as well. Hmm.
So let's talk a little bit about those more sustainable practices, those three pillars you listed. Is there a certification for this that we should be looking for as consumers? Or, you know, how do you know when palm oil is obtained sustainably and responsibly?
Or is it conflict palm oil,
right,
that you described?
Yeah. Like, I think from our perspective, you know, there have been efforts to try to grow palm oil sustainably. One of those efforts is a certification system called the Roundtable on Sustainable Palm Oil, or the RSPO. But one of the critical issues with that certification system is it still allows for the clearing of rainforests and it still allows for planting on peatlands. So, you know, and it has a poor track record of really protecting workers' rights or upholding land rights. So, you know, it's one step towards, you know, better practices, but it's really not as currently performing in the way that it needed to protect forests and peatlands and human rights. You know, I think we are part of an initiative called the Palm Oil Innovation Group that has set a higher bar that is aligned with these three pillars. And increasingly, some brands and some growers are working to that higher standard. But we are definitely at the early stages of this much-needed transition for the sector.
So Kraft Heinz, huge company, uses lots of palm oil in their food and personal care products. You had an announcement with respect to Kraft Heinz recently about perhaps a shift in their policy. We want to talk about that.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so Kraft Heinz, they're the fifth largest food company in the world, you know, the third largest here in North America. I think, you know, they have lagged behind their peers in the adoption of a policy that incorporates these three pillars. But we were pleased to announce that, you know, in March this year, they did respond to this growing pressure on them from their consumers by releasing a new policy that requires the protection of forests and peatlands and human rights. Unfortunately, the policy doesn't have a robust implementation plan, and it still relies on this flawed certification system. So we are calling on Kraft to go further and to really translate this paper policy into real action on the ground in Indonesia and Malaysia, where it's palm oil sourced. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you mentioned that Kraft Heinz has been lagging a little bit. I know that you're focusing on a group of 20 companies that are large users of palm oil. How do they compare, and what are some of these other companies doing?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so in 2013, we actually launched a campaign on the Snack Food 20. It includes all of the biggest brands on the planet, including, you know, Unilever, Nestle, Mars, Mondelez. Kraft Heinz was one of the last five companies to move through with the adoption of a stronger policy. A number of its peers have already started this work and have identified where their palm oil is grown and in what manner it's grown. You know, companies like Nestlé have been working for many years to inform their suppliers of the need to stop deforestation. So they have been out in front. But Kraft Heinz has been lagging and has only just taken this first step of committing to go above and beyond its existing practices to ensure that it's sourcing responsibly.
Do they have a kind of a timeline or a schedule or milestones they've set out to meet?
That was one of the disappointing things in the policy. It doesn't have an immediate commitment to end deforestation. So that is something that we would require immediately, given the tragedy that's unfolding right now in rainforests across these countries. It does commit to sourcing sustainable palm oil by 2025. But that is too far out, and it's actually not the right goalpost. So we're talking directly with the company. You know, we're continuing to push them to update this policy with a deadline and a time-bound plan on how it is going to achieve this goal of sourcing responsible palm oil.
So for consumers that are interested in, you know, wanting to get responsible, sustainable palm oil, what's the best way to figure this out? You know, do you contact the company that's using it? Is there, you know, are there providers of palm oil that you're looking at directly? Like, is there a way to figure this out?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think there are a number of actions that can be taken. I think at this critical moment, the most important action is to continue to directly contact these companies and to ask them to ensure that their palm oil is sourced responsibly and to speed up the implementation of these policies. There's a very easy way to do that on our website at rand.org, SF20 scorecard. So people can just go to rand.org and take action to send an email to these snack food 20 companies today. I think in regards to how do you know if the palm oil in the products you're sourcing are sustainable, we don't have a solution there right at this moment. We are hoping to really transform the RSPO system so it can be a credible certification system. That is a system that does have a logo that's put on products that refers to the sustainable palm oil within it. So, you know, you can join us in our efforts to strengthen that certification system so its logo can be one that is relied upon by consumers into the future.
Well, that sort of answers the question I got from a listener. They want to know, what do you do, Gemma, when you go shopping for products? What do you look for?
Yeah, I think, you know, personally, I'm a vegetarian. I definitely try to avoid processed foods as much as I can. I've spent 5 years negotiating with all of these companies, so I know where they stand. I personally tend to support local companies and local products and really try to focus using my consumer power there. But, you know, palm oil is so prevalent. It is in all products, and it is really hard to avoid it completely in one's life. So a lot of people do run boycott campaigns or do personally try to avoid it. I think that's a healthy way to go. But in my view, you know, our theory of change is to ensure that consumers are taking action and are pressuring these massive brands that really do have a critical influence over the palm oil industry in Indonesia.
Well, Gemma, we've got a couple of minutes left, and I wanted to touch once more on a topic we quickly passed over, which is kind of what we're losing in the rainforest. Obviously, you know, that rainforest is being demolished, but you briefly mentioned that there are a few species that, you know, are critically or that are critical that are being endangered, things like orangutans or elephants, I think you mentioned.
So, yeah, one, Yeah. One of the most incredible landscapes on the planet is called the Lhotse ecosystem. And this is an area of rainforest in Sumatra in Indonesia that is at the forefront of palm oil expansion. You know, this is the last stretch of rainforest where the Sumatran elephant, the tiger, the rhinos, and the orangutans coexist in the wild. It's an incredible landscape.
Wow.
You've also got a massive diversity of birds and insects and you name it. Like, this is a powerhouse of biodiversity that we're losing each and every day to companies that are clearing these forests to sell them to the suppliers of all of these big brands. We've just launched a movement to protect this landscape, so people can go to Love the Lhotse, that's lovethelhotse, LHOTSER.org, to really find out more about the rainforests that are being campaigned for by local groups and groups like mine across the planet. But yeah, these forests are exceptional. We really can't afford to lose them as a global community. The local communities are strong on the ground. They're fighting to keep their forests because they rely on them. And we're in a great place to support them in doing that.
Gemma Tillack, she's the Agribusiness Campaign Director for Rainforest Action Network. And Gemma, Rainforest Action Network's website, where I assume you have additional information on this, maybe some photos of a typical plant, what these typical plantations look like?
Yeah, go to ran.org, R-A-N.org, and there's a lot of information there on our forest work and a lot more information on palm oil and how people can get involved.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us this morning on This Green Earth, Gemma.
Yeah, well, thank you for caring. Have a good day.
All right, thank you. You too. Let's take a break for a couple underwriters, sponsors, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about climate change and Utah People's Climate March coming up this Saturday, the 29th. But we're also going to be talking with Piper Christian and Dave Pacheco about a joint resolution that was put forward about climate change in this past state legislature. We'll give you all the details. It's This Green Earth. We'll be right back.
All Resort Group is a proud KPCW sponsor of Mountain Money.
All Resort Group provides vans, SUVs, sedans, and Express for Less taxi to move you from Salt Lake to Park City and back, or anywhere you want to go.
Reservations at allresort.com or 649-3999.
We move people.
Hi, I'm Tom Pettigrew from Park City Mountain and a proud supporter of KPCW. From kids' rope courses to zip lines and hiking trails to the bike park, Park City offers a wide range of family-friendly activities all summer long. More information on new summer activities and all the other programs can be found at parkcitymountain.com.
Miller Orthodontics supports KPCW and their involvement with area youth and teens. Speaking of youth, did you know Invisalign has a specific type of aligner just for teens? Over 3/4 of our Invisalign patients are 19 or younger. More information about Invisalign Teen is available at m2ortho.com.
Welcome back to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues and concepts of sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak.
I'm Nell Larson.
And joining us in the studio is Dave Pacheco. He's with the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance. And on the phone is Piper Christian. She is a Logan High School student who helped draft a resolution for climate change at this year. Well, this past Utah State legislative session, and she's here to talk about that resolution, what it's about. And I think she's going to be delivering that resolution to the governor this Saturday, the 29th, down in Salt Lake City. Piper and Dave, thanks for joining us on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Piper, let's start with you. You helped draft up this resolution, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So give us a thumbnail sketch of what this resolution says.
So what really raised our awareness about what was going on in the state legislature was it came to our attention as students that in 2010, a climate change resolution, HJR 12, had been passed. And this resolution urged the Utah State or the United States EPA to cease its CO2 reduction policies until climate data and global warming science were substantiated.
Mm-hmm.
So, in essence, our student-led resolution, SJR 9 and HJR 18, these resolutions, in essence, stated that climate data has been substantiated. And that climate change poses a threat to our health, environment, and national security. And then additionally, we outlined measures for Utah to take action.
Okay, so you draft up this resolution, but you need a sponsor for it in either the House and the Senate. Who were your sponsors for this?
Yes, it originally was a Senate bill, and the sponsor was Jim DeBacus, and we were enormously grateful for him sponsoring it. And then later, we hit some snags in the Senate, and so it was. We were grateful that Representative Joel Briscoe and Becky Edwards offered to draft it as a House joint resolution, HJR 18.
Okay, so the resolution gets drafted up, it gets supported, it goes through a committee hearings, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Did you have a chance to sit in on those committee hearings?
Yes, and that was one of the most amazing experiences of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
We had two separate hearings, and at both of these hearings, we completely packed them with students. And at both of them, we had approximately 20 students, everywhere from elementary age to graduate school, give testimonies on the impact of climate change on young people. These hearings were an amazing experience.
And what were some of the discussions, some of the arguments, say, in opposition to this resolution?
We had a lot of really good discourse and discussion, especially in the House Economics and Workforce Services Committee.
Hmm.
And I think some of the concerns that were raised were, an issue of regulations and some wariness of putting more regulations on the state, and even coming down to just small wordings and things that they thought some legislators wanted to look into more before it was passed. But we were really grateful, and even though we were one vote short of getting our resolution passed, we were grateful that both Republicans and Democrats voted in favor of our resolution, and given that it was only one vote short of being passed, we are very hopeful that if we reintroduce it during the next legislative session, it has a high likelihood of getting passed, especially if we work with legislators during the interim session.
Now, do you and your fellow students or colleagues, the folks that worked on this resolution, do you plan to continue working on this yourselves next year?
Yeah, so we've contacted some legislators who we're hoping to work with them to tweak the wording and make it as, bipartisan and workable as possible. And yes, we intend to reintroduce it next legislative session.
Do you have any thoughts about making some edits or changes to it that might make it a little more compelling to get that next one vote? This ended in a 5-5 tie, right?
Correct.
Which is effectively means that it doesn't go forward because it ended as a tie. But what do you think you have to do to get that next vote?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think what we're really prioritizing is we really want to stress that our resolution is bipartisan. We believe that you know, protecting the future of you know, Utah youth and all of us is something that should not be a partisan issue. And so we're hoping to especially reach out to some Republican legislators who were supportive of us during this session and really get their input on how to frame the resolution and make it clear that this is something that can gain bipartisan support. And hopefully that would be enough sufficient to convince a few more people to vote in favor of our resolution.
Okay. By the way, what year are you in high school?
I am a junior at Logan High School.
You know what? The way you talk, carry yourself, you should just skip high. You should just stop going to high school and just go right to college. Just start showing up at college and sit in on any class you want. That's tremendous work you've accomplished to date.
Thank you.
Now, let's turn our attention to the event that's coming up this Saturday. Because Piper, you plan to read this resolution at the event, right? And then bring this resolution to the governor's office?
Yeah, that's correct. So myself and a few of my friends who worked on this resolution will be presenting at the rally. We'll kind of be opening up the presentations, and then we will be marching to the governor's mansion and kind of symbolically presenting our resolution to him. So we really hope a big priority has just been generating awareness and community support just as much as getting legislation passed, and we think this will be a really powerful avenue to do that.
Okay. Now let's bring Dave into the conversation. Dave, you're with SUA, Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance. You're going to be at this event also, too, correct?
Yes, this is an event. It's a large coalition of conservation organizations, indigenous rights, climate justice organizations across Utah. So this is the Utah People's Climate March in Salt Lake City, which is one of several hundred going on across the country with the flagship event happening in Washington, D.C., also this Saturday.
Okay. And I'm sorry, you said this is going on around the country, too. This is another march, basically. We had our March for Science, and we had Earth Day last week. Now we're turning. This is going to be focused on climate change issues.
Exactly.
Okay. What time does it start?
So the event down in Salt Lake City happens at the main downtown library. It starts at 1 o'clock with a rally. There are a series of seven speakers. All but I think one are youth students representing the various interests, conservation, indigenous rights. There'll be Pacific Islanders, Hispanic groups represented, speaking to the injustice that climate gives to particular populations, undue impacts to those populations across the planet. So it starts at 1, it'll go to about 2 with the rally and speeches itself. The group will then gather and march about 5 blocks up to the governor's mansion, arriving there around 2:15, where the event will continue with some fun, singing, dancing,
right.
And marching and chanting. And
lots of education and awareness.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the idea is to bring awareness to the issue of climate change, to give the public the knowledge that this is not some sort of, you know, off-base sort of thing. It's very common knowledge. It's supported by the vast majority of the scientific community, that the facts are the climate is changing around the planet, and humans are the primary cause of that.
Okay.
So you mentioned that there's a large group of organizations working together to sponsor or put on this walk. What is SUA's role in this?
So we're just one of many organizations involved. Our role mostly is to emphasize the climate change that's happening here in the southwestern U.S. In eastern Utah, the data shows that we're one of the most rapidly warming places in the southwest. The government itself, BLM, the Bureau of Land Management, has acknowledged that one of the key steps to responding to the rapidly changing and warming areas of the Southwest is to prioritize the protection of intact, undisturbed public lands to keep them free from soil-disturbing activities like mineral development, off-road vehicles, grazing activity, a lot of things that would destroy the fragile soils. Vegetation, those sorts of things that are going on. And the more quickly we change those, the more dust it throws up into the air, the more dust that falls onto snow out in Colorado, which causes undue it causes changes, you know, more rapid melting of the snow, et cetera.
Right.
Causes a lot more problems, right, that we could address and change ourselves.
So you guys are focused on avoiding those other impacts that are avoidable at this point, rather than those climate change, you know, impacts, or in order to lessen the impact of climate change on this area.
Exactly. Yeah. Because these things, the more we disturb the soils, the more rapidly it increases the problem of climate change, the more rapidly the problem exists. And so by addressing them with the right policies in the first place, taking into account climate change when you're making decisions about how to regulate these activities, oil and gas development, for example. The last administration, the Obama administration, required that all federal agencies take climate change into account. Those policies have now been reversed, mm-hmm, so that they no longer have to comply with that consideration. That's a problem.
Yeah, huge problem. We're speaking with Dave Pacheco with Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance and Piper Christian. She is a junior at Logan High School, and one of the authors of SJR 9 and HJR 18 back in this past state legislative session, resolutions addressing climate change and the impacts of climate change. Piper, I want to go back to you. What do your fellow students say or even think about climate change? Is there a consensus among students that this is a reality, or that it's still uncertain, or it's just not happening? You have a sense of that?
Yeah, I think this process of introducing legislation really opened my eyes to the amount, or to the willingness of students to learn more about climate change and the eagerness to get involved in addressing it. I think one of the most amazing experiences was we chartered a school bus to go down to the state capitol to bring students, and we thought we would be lucky if we got, you know, just a couple of students to fill this bus from our high school. And long story short, I step on this bus, and it was completely packed to capacity of students wanting to join us at the capitol to promote our resolution. And we saw similar things throughout the state. We would visit schools and were just amazed by the amount of students who were eager to take this issue on. I think that there is definitely an emerging force of students that care about this issue, and just based on our, you know, science education in school and just the things that we're witnessing within our own state with the, you know, worsening air pollution and other, you know, diminishing snowpack. So I do think that there is a force of students that care about this issue.
Are you studying climate change and its impacts in your classrooms?
Currently I'm taking an AP biology class, and there are definitely references in there. And what I would really hope, though, is that we can expand climate change education, not only in Utah, but nationally. But in the meantime, we are finding that sometimes for students to take these issues into our own hands can be the best form of education. I'm hoping that we can expand that infrastructure, though.
Are there environmental clubs at Logan High School or you know, groups like that?
Yeah. I'm the president of our high school environmental club, the Logan Environmental Action Force, and we also have a terrific environmental science class at our school as well.
How do students from other school districts get in touch with you to learn more about what they can do?
I think we have a Facebook page and Instagram, and social media can be a really powerful way of, you know, connecting the students around Utah. So we recommend students follow our Facebook page, the Logan Environmental Action Force, and also we do a lot of school outreach. We've done presentations at the Da Vinci Academy, the Ogden Prep Academy. So we're always willing to go and present to schools if they want to learn more.
Fantastic.
Yeah. That's the Logan Environmental Action Force. That's your Facebook page?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Well, I just wanted to switch back to Dave a little bit and chat about some of the projects you're focusing on at SUA right now. What's on the forefront of your projects right now?
Well, there are several executive orders that are coming down from the Trump administration that are of grave concern. One that we just heard news of yesterday is a review of the past 26 national monuments that have been designated by the last three presidents since the beginning of 1996. These, several of them are landscape level monuments that protect areas from fossil fuel development. That review is potentially dangerous to places in Utah, in particular the Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument, where the administration is prioritizing fossil fuel extraction, prioritizing the ongoing desire to mine the coal that is down on the Kaparowitz Plateau. That would be an environmental disaster, throwing more fossil fuels into the environment, exacerbating climate change. That review, we don't know any specifics. He's actually announcing it tomorrow. There was just a kind of a precursor announcement yesterday, but we'll find out more tomorrow about what exactly he's going to do. So that's one of the things that we're keeping our eye on, in addition to several other executive orders that are coming down. One would stop the regulation of methane flaring off of fracking wells. That's another problem for climate change. The list really goes on and on. As this president has said, he's going to prioritize fossil fuel development over other sources at a time when we're already at crisis stage. We need to be rolling those policies back. We need to be supporting renewables. We need to be producing more energy that does not contribute to climate change at this critical time.
Right, and Bears Ears remains in their crosshairs too, of course.
Exactly, yeah. That's one of the monuments that'll be under up for review. We don't know, again, what exactly these reviews will entail. What we hope is that when they look into the record, they'll see the detail that the administrations went through, the public knowledge, the public comments that they gathered, the outreach that the administration did, which was extensive in Bears Ears, for one. And acknowledge the fact that people were consulted. The tribes that came forth with the Bears Ears resolution and the proposal were did their homework. The previous administration did its homework, and that monument is designed to protect those cultural resources that are in danger of looting. And you know, with that designation, offer our nation an opportunity for some healing that's long overdue.
Okay, let's wrap up. Again, give us the particulars on the event this Saturday.
Yeah, this Saturday in Salt Lake City is the Utah People's Climate March. It starts at 1 p.m. with a rally at the main Salt Lake City Library. We'll then that lasts till 2 o'clock, and then at 2 o'clock, the group is going to march up to the governor's mansion where students from Utah will deliver the student climate resolution to Governor Herbert.
And Piper, a listener, writes in, where can they go to get a copy of this resolution? Is it available online, maybe your Facebook page?
Yes. If they want to look up the, we have two kind of versions. The updated version of our resolution is HJR 18, mm-hmm. And its sponsors were Becky Edwards and Joel Briscoe. So if they search that, they'll be able to find it. And additionally, if they want to support us, we have a petition supporting our resolution on change.org. And I believe it's Support Utah Student-Led Climate Change Resolution. So if they search that on change.org and sign our petition, we have about 1,300 signatures, and we would love more signatures for that.
Piper Christian. She's a junior at Logan High School and a budding environmental advocate. Thank you so much for taking the time and skipping class to join us this morning, I assume. And Dave Pacheco with the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance. Always glad to have Sue on. And thank you for helping sponsor this Green Earth, too, Dave. And
thank you.
We'll see you guys this Saturday down in Salt Lake City.
Thanks.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Well, let's take a break.
That's right. Quick break, and then we'll be back with some news, some updates on this past weekend's March for Science.
Absolutely. The top 10 best signs.
That's right. The best part of any march.
Not so
all
great
the great
speakers. Not the great speaker. When scientists aren't the greatest speaker. Really clever signs, though. We'll go over that with you when we come back. It's This Green Earth. Stay tuned.
Support for KPCW programming has been provided by the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance, a nonprofit organization dedicated to protecting Utah's remaining Red Rock Wilderness lands. SUWA and Utah's Red Rock Wilderness need your support now more than ever. To learn more about how you can become involved, please visit the SUWA website at suwa.org.
Hi, my name's Lisa. I work at Recycle Utah. Do you know that we accept funky items for recycling like American flags to eyeglasses and sneakers? Keep all these items out of our landfills by dropping them off at our recycling center today.
Recycle Utah is your community nonprofit recycling center since 1990 and a KPCW supporter.
I'm Darcy Olson, First Assistant Golf Pro at Park Meadows Country Club, proud sponsor of KPCW. We've expanded our junior golf program so more families can participate. We added Park Meadows Junior League, plus Park City Pinseekers PGA Junior Team, and clinics just for kids. More information at parkmeadowscc.com.
Welcome back to This Green Earth. We've got a couple minutes left in today's show, and we wanted to spend a few minutes talking about the Science March, which Chris attended.
Yes.
And took some notes on the best signs. And really, I feel like the signs are the best part of any march.
Yeah, they were. I mean, these are marches that went around all across the country, and lots of speakers. There was a big event down in Salt Lake City, but I attended the one here in Park City. Saturday morning, and there was actually a few hundred of us. We started up here at the Brew Pub, and we just marched down part of Main Street, and then circled back, and then we heard a couple of speakers talk about. City Council was there, County Council members were there, and they talked about what city and county are doing to address climate impacts, etc. It was good. But of course, the best thing was some of the signs, and there were some costumes people were dressed up in.
Oh, good.
I have here a list of some of the signs I jotted down.
All right, let's start with number 10.
All right, number let me see how many I have. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Yeah, I got about 10. All right, so the first one, this was a popular one, but I like it because it's succinct. Science, not silence.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Next one was resist ignorance. Science is truth. Okay, that's some kind of straightforward stuff.
Yeah.
The ever popular, there is no planet B.
Yeah.
I always like that one. Here's a good one. A guy with a T-shirt said, his shirt said, don't be such a scientist with the don't, where don't crossed out. So be such a scientist. Yes, I like that. All right. It's reuse. It's reuse, okay? It's a repurposing.
It resonated.
Here's a good one. Ice doesn't have an agenda. It just melts.
I like that.
This is what Charlie Matthews was wearing. This. He's the physics teacher at Park City High School. Science is not a liberal idea.
Yeah.
All right.
I like those that kind of bring it back to the center. This is not like a political.
Here's a clever one. Alternative facts are the square root of minus one.
How nerdy can you get?
Exactly.
I like it.
Right? Because what's the square root of minus one? It's an imaginary number. It's I. Right? Math heads, right. So a little girl was wearing a T-shirt that said, I'm with Mother Earth.
Aww.
I know. That's golly. This was Dr. Munch. He's the head of the Utah physician.
Isn't it Munch?
Yes, both.
Okay.
He goes by both.
Okay.
His sign was great. It said, science made America great the first time.
I saw that one a few times.
How about that?
Yep.
Two more. One person had STEM, STEM, right? Science, technology,
Engineering
and math. Well, instead, STEM stands for Science Trumps Egomaniacs.
I like it. Creative.
And then this one. I didn't have a sign.
But Chris.
I know. I wasn't.
Did you have a costume?
Almost.
Would you just?
I just
show up
and take
notes.
Cap and sunglasses and took notes. This would be mine. All right, if I did have a sign, maybe for next year's, it would be no more silent springs or summers, winters, or falls, in parentheses, right? A little play on Rachel Carson, who April 24th marks her passing. She passed away in April 24th of 1964, just 2 years after the release of her book, Silent Spring. So anyway, it's kind of a mix there. So those are the great signs. It was a great event. And it means a lot. And now go out. We all need to go out and engage ourselves, as scientists. You're a scientist. I'm a scientist, engineer, et cetera. We all need to go out and engage ourselves in the community. Lend our expertise as scientists to volunteer organizations, to community organizations. You don't always have to just say, I'm going to run for political office. You can do that, too. But you can also just get engaged in the community.
Smaller actions, I think.
Right.
Small steps.
We have small actions.
Right.
Now, we do this show.
Right.
Maybe somewhere between 8 and 12 people listen to it. And so it makes
right.
a difference.
That's
small
right.
Small steps.
We
like
hope
that.
Those 8 people learn something.
It's good. Like today, about resolutions on climate change and palm
Simple.
Oil and what to look for in palm oil. And another
yeah.
reason why you should buy local, right? That was Gemma
right,
said.
Right, and unprocessed foods.
And unprocessed
That's what I
foods.
Took away from this. She's like, I avoid those packaged foods. You
okay.
Know? Yeah.
There you go. So those are the simple steps we can all make. Okay. One last break to get. I got to squeeze in some underwriters.
Underwriters.
And we'll come back and wrap up. It's This Green Earth.
Hi, I'm Matt from San Francisco Design, celebrating 25 years in Park City. San Francisco Design is happy to sponsor public affairs programming on KPCW. For 25 years, we have been providing home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. We're located on Bonanza Drive and at sanfrandesign.com. San Francisco Design, love your home.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air, Cruise, and Travel, 565-4730, parkcityaircruiseandtravel.com. Long, Reimer, Weiniger, Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com. And the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Time to wrap things up here on This Green Earth. Let's again thank our guest, Gemma Tillich. She's the Agribusiness Campaign Director for the Rainforest Action Network. Learned a lot about palm oil and palm oil plantations.
That's right.
And
how to change it.
And how to change that. Dave Pacheco, he's with the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance. And Piper Christian, she's a student at Logan High School. They were here to talk about the climate change march this Saturday down in Salt Lake City.
That's right. It's meeting at the library and marching from there.
All right. 1 o'clock Saturday afternoon. Let's thank our sponsors and underwriters, of course, who make this show possible. They include Recycle Utah,
Republic Services,
Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance,
Vail Epic Promise,
Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties,
San Francisco Design,
Park City Mountain,
and listeners like you.
Of course. You can join us on Facebook at KPCW This Green Earth.
And we always want to hear from you about what you want us to talk about.
Exactly.
So email us your thoughts, your comments, your ideas for future shows and guests so we can get those people on the air. You can reach us at thisgreenearth@kpcw.org.
Remember, this is KPCW 91.7 FM Park City. We've got your Wasatch back. We'll see you, Nell, next week.
That's
right.
You're
going to be here?
See you in a week.
All right. We'll see you then. Thanks for joining us. NPR News is next.